Michigan HockeyCast 3.18. We're going to party like it's 2011.
Thoughts. Beats and looks. The 1-2 on the way. Swinging a fly ball hit into right field. Going back is Walker. To the track. To the wall. Are you kidding me? Jimmy over top. Two-run home run. Michigan does the unthinkable. 8-7. Two-run walk-off home run. 8 runs in the bottom of the ninth. And it's over.
Alex, you had quite a day yesterday, didn't you? Or at least an afternoon?
At least between the 7 and 7:30 hour. We'll put it like that. Because it was not a...
I mean, that was a ridiculous call. There's no way you could have been expecting that, right? Like, when it was one-run game, were you, like, thinking in your head... Because, you know, Jim Nantz, like, has these things where he, like, plans out how the Masters are going to end and what the final putt is and, like, the shots. And, you know, people do that. Did you have your call, like, ready to go?
I mean, for the record, he can plan that out because with golf, it's always going to end on a final putt. Like...
Okay. But, I mean, but they do that for, like, other sports, too. Like, when the national championship basketball game ends, like, well, there's going to be a saying that's said about the team.
No, so... That game, first off, was very bad for 3 hours.
Well, sure.
And Michigan is just getting, you know, just not playing well. The opponent had 16 hits, and Michigan had 3 hits. And just literally nothing was happening in the game whatsoever. And, you know, it was 7-0 going into the ninth. And that's when the selection show started.
That's true, because we were, like, texting about it.
I had it pulled up on ESPNU on my phone, and I tweeted about Michigan's draw during that
ninth.
I think it was after maybe the first run was scored in the bottom of the ninth.
So you did not plan this out?
Well, so I was just watching, and I'm like, okay, this is, you know, it's kind of nice that they're finally scoring, but this is way too, like, it would have been great to have not been down 7 runs. Like, this isn't going to go anywhere. And then it just keeps going, and then, you know, it gets to 7-2, and the bases are loaded. They pull the pitcher, and it was weird because Christopherson was just dealing and had really good ERA numbers. He was their go-to reliever last year and this year, and he was great through the, I think he came in the seventh, eighth, came into the ninth, and it just went way off track. And they left him in there a long time, and he wasn't getting any better. And then they bring in Jordan Beetson from the bullpen, and he comes in, his ERA on the season, again, short season, small sample size, but it's like 5.5 with a whip of like 2.3.
Who they're bringing in to close the game.
Yeah, and by that point, it was a 5-run game, but the bases were loaded and nobody was out. Like,
yeah.
By that point, it was already a very tricky situation. I'm like, why are they bringing this guy in?
Yeah.
Like, don't they have anybody?
Did you say that on the broadcast?
No, but that was in my head, but I just didn't know why they didn't have anyone better. I mean, they did play a doubleheader that day. I don't know if they exhausted their arms earlier. I didn't have time to look that up, but it was very weird. And then, you know, it gets to 7-3 on that Clark Elliott infield hit, but then Mazur pops out, and you're like, oh, well, this is probably over. And I was also hungry and wanted to get dinner after the game, so I was like, it wouldn't be bad if the game just ends now.
Let's just go home.
And so, you know, then Tito Flores comes to the plate, and he smacks that ball to the wall, and the bases are cleared now, and now it's 7-6, and at this point I'm like, oh, this is great. Like,
you're gonna be here for another hour.
Well, no, partially I was worried that it was gonna keep going.
Yeah.
But I was also kind of thinking, like, oh, overtime's gonna strike out swinging, and it's gonna be like, you came all the way back and then just weren't enough. And he falls behind 0-2, and he had had some bad free swinging at bats earlier in the game, and so I was like, yeah, I don't know about this. But and then, you know, it gets to 1-2, and I had moved from the small conference room we were sitting in outside.
You're outside doing this?
I was standing, the door was ajar, and half my body was outside,
like,
looking
out the
window
door
to get a better view, because I didn't want to look through the windows, because sometimes you can lose the ball through the windows or whatever. And so then, you know, he fouls a pitch off, takes a ball, fouls another one off, and you're like, let's see what's going to happen now. And then he hits it, and at first, I mean, my biggest fear is the Matt Shepard situation. If you've watched Tigers games in recent years, Matt Shepard has the tendency to act like the ball is going out, and then it's a routine fly ball.
Yeah.
Like,
so he's just building drama.
Well, he just can't judge fly balls.
Well,
it's
I guess
like,
that could be it.
There's a fly to left! Oh, it's going to be caught. And it's just like a routine fly ball.
It's barely out of the infield.
And so you never want to do that, especially in a big situation. And I had already gotten burned on Friday, which you don't need to look that one up. But at least then it was a lot sunnier. And
at least
we lost,
I didn't lead with that.
Yeah, lost the ball in the sun. So whatever. So I was like not going to try and blow the top off unless I really knew it was a homer. And so he hit it, and you know the fielder starts running, and you get that sense where you're like, oh, boy. Like internally you're thinking like, oh, my God, this could happen.
This might happen.
And then he turns his back and looks up, and then at that point you just take off. And I don't know. I mean, I just kind of went to the instinctual call, I guess, of what I had. You never want to go too crazy, but I thought I at least put a pretty –
You didn't want to go, Al Michaels, do you believe in miracles as he's crossing the plate?
I thought I hit the, you know, the right amount without going, you know, the remember the avalanche of goals back at where it's, you know, breaking the sound out and your computer speakers have been fried.
You were amazing, though. I mean, the call was perfect. Not only just when the ball went over the fence, but then as he's, like, coming around third to hit home, you're like, Michigan does the unthinkable. And it was, like, really well done.
So, and then, you know, I didn't expect it to go as crazy as it was. I mean, that video now has been seen over 350,000 times.
So you're like viral. You are the voice.
Except my name isn't attached, so, you know.
But that's what this is about.
And, you know, that's a good example of just being in the right place at the right time, right? Like, it wasn't hyped up. I mean, this was just a routine game. It just happens to happen. And, you know, SportsCenter tweeted it out today as well. So,
so you're all over the place. So have you been getting calls from people that you haven't heard from in like 10 years?
No. Well, some of the old people I worked with back in the day have.
Hey, I heard you on not only WCBN or BTN, but ESPN. Man, you've just gone like to the pinnacle.
Yeah. So it was wild. I mean, that was definitely one of the craziest baseball games I've ever seen.
My question is, our intro is still getting a little long here, but that's okay. Is like, what are the comps to this? Like, Michigan football have they had like a walk-off win like that? Like the 2011 Notre Dame game, like the under the lights game was kind of like that.
I mean,
that would be a call for this.
There was that weird 2015 game against Minnesota
with the build a wall game,
the goal line stand. I don't remember.
Yeah. That was a big one. The other one I was thinking of is like if JT was actually real short, like that would have been a big walk-off, because that would have been like the build-the-wall game.
I mean, I called the Charles Matthews buzzer beater against Minnesota a few years ago.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That wasn't nearly as climactic.
The pool shot.
Oh, yeah, the pool shot.
The pool shot is like the basketball version. Yeah. And I was trying to look at hockey, because obviously we're supposedly a hockey podcast. But Michigan like loses all their overtime games in the tournament.
In the
tournament, all the big ones. So you have like the most memorable baseball call, other than maybe Illinois a couple of years ago when they had that Big Ten tournament.
Yeah. Well, also, right? I mean, when you know in the College World Series, one of our old alumni, Austin Falco, crushed the Jimmy Kerr home run in Game 1 of the championship. I mean, that was a really good call. So, you know, there were moments along that run as well.
But a walk-off is like...
A walk-off is
you
different.
Have,
yeah.
Like, the stage is clear for you. You can do whatever you want.
Well, I mean, and also the rally was just crazy. It was bizarre. I mean, I was finishing up my score sheet today, and you're never going to see a score sheet weirder than that. Especially the line score. 0-0-0-0-0-0-0-8.
I went to, that's a perfect example of, like, you don't leave a game early. Like, when I was 12, I went to a minor league baseball game of a team that I'd gone to most of the games throughout the year in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and they made the playoffs. And over Labor Day weekend, they were a best of three, and they hosted the first game. And so they were down huge in the ninth inning. I think it was 12-5, so it's very similar. And my mom had come to pick me up because she didn't want to go. So she's there, and my aunt's there with her. And my grandma and I are sitting there, and we've been watching it, and we're just like, well, I guess we're going to have to win two on the road. And it starts like with a walk, and you get a hit, and just it ends with like a three-run bomb, and they win 14-12. And I was just – that is forever burned in my mind. This is why you never leave a game early. Like, I don't care. You just – if you commit to something, this is what it is. And that was like a perfect example of, you know, it's just a baseball game in a regular season, but, I mean – it might just put you on SportsCenter.
Yeah. Well, so. Thankfully I couldn't leave early.
You had disappeared for a while, and we're like, man, I wonder if Alex just decided to peace and come get dinner and watch some basketball. But that was a day I'm guessing you'll never forget.
Definitely in my top five broadcasts of all time.
So, should we talk about the top 16 hockey teams that are left?
It's the real Power 16.
The real Power 16.
After all the weeks of the fake Power 16.
The CHN
yeah.
Power 16. Now we have the NCAA Power 16. So, the selection shows last night, which you came over afterwards, and we were kind of discussing a little bit. But this is like 2011 all over again. You have North Dakota, Michigan, Duluth, and if they had swapped American and Notre Dame, who sneaks into the field, it would have been the 2011 Frozen Four.
Yeah, I don't remember who was in the 2011 Frozen Four.
Well, that's because you were like 4 years old, so I don't blame you for that. But, I mean, what a regional. Like, at first blush, like, this feels like the worst draw Michigan can get. Like, we talked about last week, who do we want to avoid? And North Dakota was, I mean, that's the one seed you probably
avoid. I mean, okay, let's be clear here. They didn't give a meatball. Like, they didn't serve up Minnesota State as a one. They also didn't serve up, I can't remember who the other team was. Was UMass maybe going to be a one on one of those bracketologies? It wasn't a serious one, but there was...
They were kicked around.
Yeah. And they didn't. They went with the big two of Dakota and, you know...
And BC.
And then they gave Wisconsin and Minnesota the other ones. And unless they were going to double seed the Big Ten in one region, we were going to get either of the big ones. So it's not like it's a terrible draw. It's just... There are good teams, and you have to beat good teams.
Well, and I think the thing with Duluth is, like, you look at that and you think, oh, they're two-time defending national champions. They have that memorable game against Michigan 10 years ago. And, you know, what? So even if Michigan can exercise one demon, they get North Dakota, I mean, presumably. And it's just, like, this couldn't have gone worse. But then we stayed up probably way too late last night doing some digging, and... I think the Duluth matchup isn't as bad as... This isn't like... I think I said it
this
right.
Isn't
this
Duluth
isn't one of those Duluth teams.
I mean, this wasn't Duluth of 2 years ago when they were the number two overall seed and they kind of steamrolled their way to the championship.
No, this Duluth team has players, but they do have some draft picks. I think about 7 or 8.
So let's introduce this.
Okay.
This is the Fargo Regional.
Okay.
North Dakota is the one. Right. Michigan is the two. Duluth is the three. And American International is the four, just in case people didn't understand that. And the games are taking place on Friday and Saturday.
Yes, I believe 4 o'clock, and then the championship game of the, what did you want to call this, the quarter?
Yeah, the regional. This is the one of the region. Is this the Midwest Regional? I think the Midwest is in Allentown.
There is no Midwest Regional.
This is the West,
I don't care
North.
It's the
Scotiabank North Regional, Rocket Mortgage North Regional.
Rocket Mortgage. All right. The Fargo Regional, which whatever you want it, is the championship game of that is then Saturday.
Told that Fargo has good bingo by someone.
Yeah, my buddy apparently knows where to go to play bingo.
Well, so if you're planning to go to the...
But your mom's into bingo, you said.
Yep.
So it's apparently a thing.
Yeah, I've played bingo at county fairs and stuff.
Have you won?
I mean, yeah, you play a bunch of sheets over time, you're going to win at least one.
Is that the analytics way to like win bingo, is play a bunch of sheets?
But if you're going to Fargo, if you find the bingo, tweet at us.
So I've never been to North Dakota. That's one of like 5 states I've never been to.
Not surprising.
I mean, okay, but I've always sort of wanted to go. It's been a joke in my family of when I've been like, hey, let's go to North Dakota on a joke, and people are like, oh, we're not going to go there, and I was like, But I want to go.
But you're not going, correct?
Probably not, unless something changes, but I don't plan on it, no.
No.
Okay.
So the first game will be Friday at 4, is that correct?
I think it is, on ESPNU, I believe.
I think ESPN2. ESPNU, maybe?
Hey, if it's 2, great.
It's not streaming, that's the good news.
Okay, yes.
The
night game is streaming.
Yes, the night game is, but we're on a cable channel, so
yes.
That's a plus. Anyway, Duluth, what do you have to say about them?
So I go through their numbers, and they're 15th in Corsi, which is goodish, I guess.
Fine.
They're 20% on the power play, which is average-ish.
19th out of 51 teams.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. 75% on the penalty kill. That's a bit of a red flag.
44th out of 51.
Yeah, that's something that I think Michigan can take advantage of. They have 8 drafted skaters, which is...
That combo of special teams really gives the 2018 Michigan vibes, where you're solid on the power play and the penalty kill is a major weak spot.
Yeah. I wonder if they have a Cooper Marody who just scores all your power play goals.
Does not appear.
So eight drafted skaters, but I was looking into them and none of them are higher than the third round.
Yeah, they never.
And most of them are like in the lower rounds.
They never really have many, you know, high drafted guys, at least traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
Tends to be, you know, depth, good talent all around, but, you know, no high end ringers.
They have 4 skaters that average over 0.75 points per game. And if you look through it, they're sprinkled throughout about 3 lines.
Yeah.
So they do have some scoring depth.
Well, they got 2 guys that are a point per game, Nick Swaney or Swaney, mm-hmm. not sure how you're going to pronounce that, and Jackson Cates those are the 2 guys at a point per game, then a bunch of other dudes, Cole Koepke, Noah Cates, there's 2-3 other names beyond that. So, you know, again, they have some depth scoring among the forwards.
Correct. And their goaltending seems to be a little iffy. They have one guy who's played about 19 games, another guy's played about 7. But the last, like, I looked through their last 5 or 6 games, and it looked to be somewhat of a split. So it did not look like one guy started, and then it just switched over, and they've been riding the next guy.
Well, the weird thing about it is that the guy who's started a lot more has the worst stats.
Right. But he's also played the last 2 games.
I assume it'll be him.
I guess. So I took their team GAA and save percentage because I wasn't really sure. I don't think the difference was that off from at least the guy who's played a lot. So their GAA is 2.32, which is okay. And their save percentage is 0.909, which is low. And then their record in their last 5 games. So are they hot? You know, whatever, if that means anything. They're 2-3.
Yeah.
So to me, this doesn't scream some... Oh, no, please don't make us play this team. Does it to you?
Not really. What's interesting also is, you know, defensively, they don't score a lot from the defensive side.
That was very interesting. They have 4 goals from defensemen.
Because, especially, you know, I don't remember the 2019 Duluth team very much. Michigan wasn't in that tournament. And, you know, I watched some of the games on TV, but I wasn't watching intently. But if you go back to 2018 when they won the title at the Frozen Four Michigan was at, and I was there and, you know, watching those games, I mean, their team was really driven from the back end forward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you remember Scott Perunovic was a really good player back then. Now in the Blues system, it was a 2nd-round pick, and he really drove play through the middle in transition, and they also had Mikey Anderson, Dylan Sandberg. Those were all drafted guys. Mikey Anderson's in the NHL nowadays.
He's with the Kings, right?
Yep. He was playing last night against Vegas. I was watching those highlights, and I saw his name, and I'm like, oh, yeah, so he is in. Yeah. But anyway, point is, they were very defensively driven. Those teams... You know, worked best with the defenseman coming up, jumping into plays, pinching aggressively, and leading the rush. This is not like that at all. Wyatt Kaiser is their highest score. I think he has 10 points.
All assists.
Yeah, in 26 games. He is a draft guy, but they just don't seem to have those kinds of high-impact offensive defensemen that the teams of a few years ago had.
So I believe this HockeyCast is going to be posted later in the week, so hopefully you've already read our tournament preview where we go through each matchup and then kind of point out some more in-depth things about the Michigan-Minnesota Duluth matchup. But one of those things that I had ended up talking about was what you just sort of mentioned, is Michigan needs to find a way to take the Duluth forwards out of the offensive game and push the puck to the edges and see if they can get Duluth's defensemen to have to step up and do the playmaking and do the shooting, because that does not seem to be their strength, like you said. And if Michigan can do that and lock down those forwards, because it's not just one line. Like, if you remember when Michigan played Northeastern a couple of years ago, they had that Gaudette line that was like 3 Hobie finalists or whatever,
yeah.
And then nothing. And they had a nice goalie, but it was a good power play, which consisted of that line that did all their scoring. And then if you could limit that, it wasn't...
But that was a tricky matchup because Michigan's penalty kill was so bad.
Sure. But what I'm saying is that there's not like one line,
no,
I think, that you can focus on to be like, all right, if we can limit this line.
Well, generally speaking, you know, forcing the play low to high is a pretty good strategy for, you know, any team on the defensive side, just because analytically, generally speaking, shots from the point are not efficient offense. I mean, there's definitely a thought process where you think about what kinds of defensemen are now sort of overvalued, at least in the sense of analytics. People think these are overvalued versus undervalued. Undervalued, at least analytics darlings, tend to be, you know, guys like Victor Mete from the Canadiens, who is an analytics darling, and, you know, one of your guys, Devon Taves, guys that are smaller, that can do continuation plays, that are good skaters, that can jump up. You know, that is what analytics people say is what you want, is a defenseman who
it's
can
like
really
the future
facilitate the play and keep it moving and maintain possession, as opposed to sort of if you watch the Canadiens under Claude Julien before he got fired, where their whole strategy was just get the puck in the zone, get it to the defenseman at the point, they take a shot into 12 bodies, rebound, someone gets it back, put it back to the point, take a shot off 12 guys into the corner.
Sort of like just serving up crosses in soccer, where you just put it in the box and hope the guy heads it.
I mean, their offense is just Shea Weber and, you know, Brett Kulak just shooting over and over and over again into six people in front of that.
And
Michigan would love to play that
game
if they can get Duluth to do that.
Yeah. Which something tells me that Scott Sandlin is not going to settle for that, but if Michigan can tie people up and at least force that to have to happen, that's sort of probably the ideal situation. The other thing that I jotted down and we talked about in the article was just getting shots, because I think that Michigan is probably going to have an advantage in net, and they have done better throughout the year from a Corsi standpoint of controlling the puck and getting attempts on net. Obviously, they have to hit the net with these shots, but Duluth's goalie numbers are not the greatest, and it seems like whoever they face is probably going to crack more before Strauss Mann does.
Probably.
The last game aside, I would say. Probably is the key word there. But when you're looking at, I mean, do you feel comfortable with Strauss Mann in a game where he needs to win a game as playing goalie, not just in a shootout, but like, hey, you need to rest on someone? Because I still do.
Yeah, probably.
Sound convincing over there. So it's a pretty simple thing, but...
I mean, I think the last game is a good reminder that if you enter anything thinking our goalie is in, you know, unbreakable, you might be disappointed.
Well, yes. Unbreakable seems to be an extreme, but
unless your goalie was Dominic Hasek circa 1999.
Correct. And then the last thing that I had is, and this is the weirdest thing, man, is like... Duluth's luck in the tournament is ridiculous. I mean, did you look at any of this? Since 2011, when they beat Michigan in the title game, they have won six straight NCAA tournament games in overtime. Like, not that they played six overtime games in a row, but when they went to overtime in the tournament in the last decade, they've won now six in a row.
So my thesis is that they're not going to win a national title for at least 40 more years.
Because
they used up all their luck. So we brought this up last week when the Montreal Canadiens won 11 straight overtime games to win the Cup in 93. No Canadian team has won a Cup since then. And my thesis is that they used up all the luck. And
in like the country of Canada?
Yeah, and so that's why they've been cursed, is that all of the good mojo for the playoffs for the all seven franchises was used up that year.
So on top of that, the other thing that Duluth has somehow managed to do well is win one-goal games. They're 8-1 in the tournament in the last three tournaments.
Yeah.
In one-goal games. That seems insane.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of times. If you can choose one of those two things, you just can't always control that. So, I mean, I guess what's your wrap-up of this matchup? Are you happy with it now? I mean, look at the other three seeds. Would you rather get Quinnipiac?
Probably.
You still would rather have Quinnipiac. What about BU?
No.
See, BU seems loaded.
BU's been a weird team because they haven't played many games, but they have a lot of talented guys.
Like,
I mean,
13 draft
it depends on... Because BU doesn't have the coach they used to have. I think their coach
was
David Quinn,
yeah,
right?
He's with the Rangers
now, yeah. So, I don't know. But BU has a lot of talent, and that is a bit concerning. And they didn't play much, but when they did play, they were very good, and... That just feels like a dangerous wild card to me.
The other one is Lake State.
Lake State is frightening, if only because even though they're from the WCHA and I'm a WCHA hater, they are, I think, 15-1 in their last 16 games.
Yeah, they're insanely hot.
That's very frightening. Also, their first trip to the tournament, I believe, since Jeff Jackson was there in 1995.
So in your lifetime.
Yeah. Shout out to Lake State.
They also have, like, phenomenal goaltending.
Wonder if Luke Morgan wishes he was still there.
I'm guessing no. But maybe. I mean, maybe. Where are they? In Sault Ste. Marie?
Sault Ste.
Marie. Have you been to Sault Ste. Marie?
I have not.
I have not either, so I can't comment on that. We should touch on the other matchup. Hopefully Michigan wins this one, and then they would face either...
The nice thing is Michigan's game is first, so
yes.
You can just stop caring about anything if there's a loss.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we're going to have to talk about it, but... So, it's North Dakota, who we mentioned before, who is like the Goliath behemoth of college hockey, if there is one, and American International, which is a wee little Yellow Jacket.
So, American International is a wonky team. They...
Well, you had a weird theory about them.
Okay, so, number one, they're 15-3 on the year, which looks good. They didn't play anybody, because they're in Atlantic Hockey, so the teams they played are Air Force, Army, Bentley, Long Island, Holy Cross, Sacred Heart, Niagara, Canisius, and Quinnipiac. So they played a bunch of trash, and then they played Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
They went 15-1 against those other teams. They went 0-2 against Quinnipiac.
It's still only two games.
The other weird thing is they did not play from January 30th until March like 18th.
So they were really celebrating my birthday.
Yeah,
they just stopped on my birthday.
They went on a Mardi Gras trip, then they went on a spring break trip, then they went on a skiing trip, and really got a lot of time off. And they're an interesting team because this is their second trip to the tournament. Their last trip was in 2019.
Yes.
When they were the number 16 team.
The last team in.
Playing the number one overall seed.
Yes.
In Fargo on a Friday, and they won.
Against St. Cloud.
Against an NCHC team.
That's... Like, people who don't believe in, like, the weird mysticisms of the NCAA hockey tournament, like, I just don't get it. Like, I'm not one to be, like, chasing down spooks, but, like, when it comes to this particular tournament, it is creepy, man.
So, a lot is similar there, and their top six scorers are all junior or senior forwards who were on the roster then.
So, they've been through that.
Yeah, and their coach has been through that.
Does that matter, do you think?
Well, and the other thing I think about them that's dangerous if you're North Dakota, this is just grabbing at straws, right, to see what scares you. What scares you is the 15-3 record. This isn't a team that, you know, has been knocked around. They're playing with a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
And they just won their conference tournament after a long break. And again, I mean, as you know, you think about the infamous Appalachian State game. Like,
glad you brought that up.
When you play against a team that's got a lot of confidence, even if they're the underdog, if they've been a championship team, right?
Yeah.
Even at their level against their level of teams, if they come in with that confidence and that winner's mentality, they can be tough. So that would be the worry if this was a North Dakota podcast, but it isn't. So,
I mean, we're all going to be Yellow Jacket fans for a couple hours.
Other thing with AIC, they are eighth best in the country on the power play at 23.8%. But they're 36th at 77.5% on the penalty kill. That reared its head against Quinnipiac. If you look at that Quinnipiac series, they lost those two games 8-3 and 3-2, so 11-5 on aggregate. Not great. However, the shots in the two games combined were basically even, and goals at 5-on-5 were basically even, 4-3 in favor of Quinnipiac. Caveat, Quinnipiac went 7-for-14 on the power play.
Wow.
So.
That's...
If AIC can stay out of the box, they've got a shot.
Do you think they'll be able to?
Not likely, but hey, it's playoff hockey, and referees tend to swallow the whistle in playoff games, so maybe that helps them.
The drafted players thing is the thing that kind of scares me here a little bit, because, I mean, North Dakota's going to be good at everything, but they have 12 drafted players.
Okay, so one more thing about American International.
Okay.
They're the oldest team in the NCAA by average age.
Oh, so they're basically a minor league hockey team.
Yeah. Versus North Dakota, who we should note, Dakota, Duluth, and Michigan are all in the bottom 10 of teams in the country.
Which makes sense.
In average age.
You have that many draft picks.
Yeah. So Dakota, as you said, has 12 draft guys.
So that's a significant talent advantage, you would think.
Against American International.
Yeah, I mean, against a lot of teams other than...
Michigan.
Michigan or...
Wisconsin. Minnesota.
Like BU. BC, I mean, those BU, teams are going to be loaded. Yeah. I mean, that plays into why they're going to be... They also keep the puck a lot. They're eighth in Corsi, which is good.
I mean, everything about Dakota, all of their stats are good.
Yep.
There's really, you know, they score 4 goals per game. They allow 2 goals per game. 7th best on the power play, 6th best on the penalty kill, 8th in Corsi, You know, their goalie has good stats.
The goalie numbers are 1.81, and
yeah,
and then their save percentage is 0.92.
Oh, and they're the number one face-off team in college hockey. So, you know,
I mean, is that do you think that's relevant?
Well, I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
They have three guys who are point per game. Jordan Kawaguchi, who is probably the top undrafted player in college hockey who's about to get an NHL contract the moment North Dakota is eliminated. Number two is Shane Pinto, second round pick of the Ottawa Senators, who is, I think, at like 65% on faceoffs this year.
Are you pre-ordering his jersey?
Taking a gazillion of them. He is by far the best faceoff man in college hockey.
Okay.
And most analytics people and even scouts generally laugh at faceoffs. Like, if you watch the Red Wings games, they talk about Luke Glendening's faceoff numbers literally every game. And most analytics people argue that faceoffs are really overrated, that, yeah, you establish possession at the beginning, but after that, you know, the play just continues. It's mostly overrated. But most scouts will concede that when you're winning faceoffs at 60%+, that's to the point that you have to mention that in a scouting report.
That's above,
because
like,
it's
the
such a
yeah
strength. And sure. So you would have to think it'll be a lot of Pinto against Bortolo if Michigan gets to face North Dakota when it comes to those faceoffs. So that'll be interesting. Pinto is also a menace in the slot and in the net front. Not as like a Tim Kerr, Rick Five. There's some 80s names for you.
Wow.
As like back down and, you know, knock you around in the crease. He's like a Tomas Holmstrom, Joe Pavelski, James Van Riemsdyk.
Like a tip artist?
Yeah, tip artist. So Pinto, they're going to have to deal with there. Then Colin Adams is the other point-per-game guy who's a really good player and a draft pick. You know, they got guys on the second line, Reese Gaber, Grant Mismatch, one of the great names in college hockey. He was a second-round pick of the Predators. Weatherby is another draft guy. And then you look at their defense, where it really has a lot of shades of North Dakota. No, sorry, Minnesota.
Minnesota?
Yeah, Minnesota.
Okay.
North Minnesota.
There you go. It's kind of the same.
Anyway, because they've got, you know, Kjerstad, who's their high-scoring offensive defenseman, but then they have four guys behind that are all draft guys, including Jake Sanderson, who was a number five overall pick in the draft in the fall.
He was on the U.S. team.
Yeah, he was the U.S. a team's best defenseman. That team with Beniers, and I mean, he knows some of the Michigan guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sanderson is a lot like, if we have a Red Wings fans listening to this podcast, Sanderson is a lot like Moritz Seider in that he's a big guy but can skate really, really well.
Hmm.
You may remember his father, Jeff Sanderson, from the 90s.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So he can skate. He's big. He's not offensive in the Quinn Hughes mold, but he, you know, is a great transition. He's a number one transition defender in college hockey. One of the best transition defenders ever recorded at the U.S. 18 level, which is pretty frightening. And he can shoulder a lot of minutes. Jacob Bernard Docker was a first-round pick of the Senators. He's a good player. Tyler Cleven, a second-round pick of the Senators. 50%.
How many of these jerseys are you
15%
getting?
Of North Dakota's defense are Senators prospects. And then they have Cooper Moore, who was a fifth-round pick of the Red Wings a year ago. So, you know, if their top five defenders, four are draft guys, and the other one is the leading scorer among defensemen on their team.
I mean, there's a reason why they're the best team in the country.
Yeah. And their goalies, you know, goals against, sub two, save percentage, .928. I mean, there are no weaknesses, but, you know, you can beat a team that doesn't have. I mean, what are Michigan's weaknesses?
I don't think they have an elite scorer.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that if they play, it would be a very good hockey game, and if you're interested in NHL prospects in particular, it would be a very interesting hockey game. I mean, that would be,
for the
internet scout class, a North Dakota-Michigan matchup on Saturday would be must watch.
Well, it's like the Minnesota game where you watch them play each other, and one team's going to win because they do one thing right or someone does something wrong. It's probably not going to be a strength or weakness that the other team just exploits to death, because both teams are going to be very strong. And when you play a game that someone has to win, clearly. And I mean, that's...
And, you know, Dakota...
I didn't mean to cut you off there, but, like, it's good to be, like, in one of those games. Like, Michigan has always... I feel like in the last few years we've been covering or paying attention, they're always like, all right, we have to cover this hole, or we have to make sure that, like, we take advantage of this or whatever. And it's nice to be in games where you're like, well, we're a really good team. And you might be a really good team. Hopefully we win, but it's probably going to be a good game.
Definitely will be the most stress since Frozen Four 3 years ago. So,
yeah, well,
we should post. Remember that Dickie V tweet that I showed you from the NFC title game where he's laying on
where he's
the
just
couch.
Passed out.
we should.
Are we gonna have a camera on us watching this game, like dying? I hope we get to this game.
I hope we do too.
It's a slam dunk that they beat Duluth.
No, I don't think it is at all.
They think they're they'll probably be. If you were gonna favor a hockey game,
yeah.
I like Michigan's odds, I guess, more than I would like Duluth, but. In this game, like, I went through who I picked to come out of the regional, and, I mean, honestly, I thought Dakota would, because I think they're the best team. I think Michigan can win it. It's one game.
Here's what I'll say.
But
if I was Nodak, I would be very mad with this.
Because you're in a stacked bracket?
I would have bribed the committee to swap Michigan for Minnesota State. Or for UMass, honestly.
Well,
I think Michigan is the most dangerous two seed in the tournament, and I think if you're the number one overall seed, you feel like you got screwed to get a team with as much talent as Michigan has, and that is generally played as, like, Michigan played Minnesota even, you know, just a week ago, and Minnesota's the number three overall seed.
And they've played them even, like, three times.
Yeah, like, I would not be happy with this draw if I were North Dakota.
That is interesting, and if you stick around long enough, which is just on the other side of this break, we will tell you about another regional that seems kind of stacked.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Michigan pulls off the unthinkable again.
It's not that unthinkable.
It's unthinkable, Alex.
No, it's not.
Why? Have you seen something unthinkable? They would end up facing... I mean, they don't even have, like, names anymore. This is just the Bridgeport Regional. So, the Connecticut Regional.
The Northeast Regional.
I guess.
The East Regional.
It's one of them. What's the difference? They're in the same place, basically. Like, they're all within an hour and a half of each other.
Oh, the Northeast and the East versus the West and the Midwest, which are also in the same place, too, just a lot further west.
So the Bridgeport Regional has Wisconsin as the one, UMass, nothing, just UMass, Massachusetts, as the two.
UMass Amherst.
Sure, not Mass Lowell.
Yep.
Lake Superior State is the three, which, whoa, and Bemidji State as the four. So you have the first game is, well, I don't know what the first game is, but the first game we're talking about is Massachusetts Lake Superior State, which is interesting because Lake State wins their tournament, conference tournament, and gets in and is a three. They are not in if they lose to Northern.
Probably not, but they had really caught fire by the end of the season and were making a case for themselves.
Yeah, they're like 13-3 in their last 16 games, I think I saw.
And I said 15-1.
15-1?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you might need to edit this thing. No, not of the podcast, like on the article where I wrote 13-3. We can continue talking. It's okay.
Okay. Anyway, we don't edit anything from this podcast.
Very, very little. Sometimes we throw in stories at the end. Anyway, Massachusetts Lake State. Lake State is super hot, right? But Massachusetts is also playing well.
Yeah, I mean, UMass is a team that looks real solid all around. I mean, they've got a 925 save percentage. That's third in the country.
Yeah.
Their power play is 12th at 22.9, and their penalty kill is
90.
Is 90%, which
insane.
Is third.
Yeah.
And guess who's number one? Bemidji State.
Who's also in the tournament. Spoiler alert.
And Minnesota's also got a good penalty kill. So this is the penalty killing region.
I guess.
I like UMass a lot, but Lake State, you can't discount a hot team that's playing with a lot of confidence.
Well, they both score goals too, don't they?
Yeah. By the way, you know what Long Island's power play percentage is?
I'm guessing it's probably low.
4.8.
Hey, that's actually probably pretty
67%
good.
67% on the penalty kill.
I mean, this is their first year, right? Like, did they even have a club team before this?
I don't know.
Did they just get, like, 25 students and say, hey, you want to put on some hockey jerseys?
Yeah, they went down and got some people.
I didn't even know it was a college or a university.
Is it LIU or is it LIU Brooklyn? Because MSU played LIU Brooklyn in the NCAA tournament 1 year.
So in the NCAA tournament?
In the basketball tournament, yeah.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
That school exists. I don't know. Anyway, back to the story. You know, this is, I think, one of the more interesting regions. I mean, where you kind of, you know, in Michigan's region, you have an interesting matchup in the first round, but you kind of assume Dakota will steamroll AIC.
I mean,
whereas with this, I mean, I could see Bemidji beating Wisconsin. I mean, I don't believe in the WCHA much, but Bemidji was the second best team in that conference, probably. Maybe Lake State, and you know they've played some teams, and Wisconsin obviously is a very good team. But again, the other thing here, we don't know how these conferences stack up against each other, so we can go off of past performance in the tournaments as a way to try and triangulate and come up with it. But
the interesting thing about Wisconsin is I'm still not 100% sold on their goaltending.
Like, I like Cameron Rowe a lot.
Yeah, but he wasn't even playing in the Big Ten.
I don't know why Beidou was playing in the tournament.
So we don't know who they're going to bring.
Yeah.
And they will give up goals. Like, they score a ton. I mean, Cole Caulfield is probably too good for college hockey. No, he is too good for college hockey.
So is Holloway.
And Dylan Holloway is also very good. But, like, they can be susceptible on the back end at times.
And this is a region, I think, that just overall... maybe the least, I don't know, the Minnesota region too, maybe the least talented region in terms of UMass has some guys, Lake State doesn't have many, Bemidji has none,
yeah,
and Wisconsin has basically two guys, and then they have some players behind that are pretty good, but not a ton of like NHL players outside of maybe the two best players in the country.
They do have that killer power play though, probably because of those guys.
Yeah,
but then they will be facing the number one penalty kill, which should be interesting, don't you think? You have a 32% on the power play for Wisconsin versus 93% kill rate for the Beavers.
Something's got to give.
Something has to give, assuming there are penalties.
There might not be.
There might not be any penalties. Then nothing has to give.
If it gets into overtime, there are no penalties.
Well, yeah, hopefully.
You have to be on a breakaway and the player is diving from behind to trip you off.
You have to be bleeding from multiple orifices in order to get a call in overtime. Do you have a gasoline in this region?
A what?
A guess or a lean.
Oh, I thought you said gasoline in this.
Do you have gasoline? Do you have diesel in this region? Maybe some rocket fuel?
I mean, I want to believe the Big Ten is elite, but...
Like in basketball?
That's why I was going to the Sweet 16.
Hey, go Ducks.
What? Anyway.
Quack.
No, I don't have a pick. I think making picks is super... Actually, we'll do picks at the end of this.
We won't do picks in it. We're going to do picks here in the thing.
Okay.
So people are going to read it.
Next region, Minnesota, Minnesota State, Quinnipiac, and Omaha.
In that order.
I would be happy with this draw if I'm Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, you have Uno who... I mean, I was trying to look up something interesting to say about them when I was writing the article that you're going to contribute to as well, and I couldn't find anything. Do you have anything interesting to say about them? All their numbers are, like, middling.
Yeah,
They're fine.
They have okay power play, okay penalty kill, okay save percentage... Not too old, not too young.
They're also 1-4 in their last 5 games. It's not like they're hot.
No. Plus 9 goal differential over 25 game span, which isn't really anything to speak about.
They've won 14 games this year.
And 4 were in overtime.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was the thing holding them back in the bracketology process.
Okay.
And was that like a couple bounces but they're not in the tournament?
11 of those wins have all come against the 4 teams below them. They finished 4th in the NCHC. And... so they only have 3 wins against the top 3 teams. So they didn't. It's not like they're beating teams that are better than them. They're just pounding the bottom teams, which there's something to be said for that. But
yeah,
it's not like I'm guessing that their ceiling is super high.
I mean, this is a team Minnesota should beat, but like, I don't know. Minnesota went to overtime with Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament. So
with the greatest Corsi differential in the history of hockey.
So things can get weird. Minnesota State, we talk about a lot and like to dunk on them. Because they always have, their numbers look like North Dakota's, but they don't actually do any of the things North Dakota does when it comes tournament time. I mean, their numbers are always ridiculous. Like, they got a plus 50 goal differential in a 25-game season.
They're like the Wisconsin in the Big Ten West in football.
Yeah. Like, they don't allow any goals. They have great power play, great penalty kill. I mean, they're the number one team in Corsi. They everything about them looks like this team is unbeatable. And then they never win games in the tournament.
The thing is, you can look at it, is how many drafted players they have.
Not many.
Two.
Yeah.
And none of them are like, neither of them are like high-end picks.
Yeah. But if
they're old and they're experienced.
And then Quinnipiac is the other team in this region, and I don't know what to say about Quinnipiac.
They're the same. You have the same essentially numbers,
except they in the same no they roster. They didn't play in a real conference.
But you hate the WCHA. Is that a real conference?
It's realer than the four.
Realer?
It's the realer than the four.
Realer again.
Yeah, than the four team, maybe three team. Now it's two team, ECAC.
It's one team.
One team. I mean, they did not play anybody notable in the regular season. Clarkson was the only team they played, and Clarkson went 2-3 before folding their season.
Just because the team went to a party, right? Yeah. Were there any positives? Or was it just they went to a party and everybody got mad?
I think the university got mad at them. I'm not sure what happened. But anyway.
Some weird stuff going on in the ECAC, man.
They didn't play anybody. And they got a goalie who's probably good, Keith Petruzzelli. He's a Hobie finalist, a Red Wings prospect. A lot of the Red Wings fan I follow on Twitter are excited for the season to end so that they can sign him.
Odin Tufto is their high-end scorer, but I was looking.
I mean, it's them.
He doesn't have any goals.
And he's a Hobie candidate, too.
Right, but he doesn't have any goals. He has like 7 or 8 goals and like almost 40 assists, which is crazy.
Them against Minnesota State is very much two masked men walk into a room, and we will see who is the real one and who is the fake when they take off their masks.
Which one is Slim Shady?
Yeah. And, you know, we will find out which one is more real than the other two.
So you don't have a pick from this one either.
Not from that matchup, but I have Minnesota in this region.
I think Minnesota's coming out of this region.
Okay, last region. Boston College.
So this is the spoiler alert where we talked about the end of it, where if Nodak thinks they got screwed because they got Michigan, Boston College is set to get St. Lawrence, and because of a COVID issue with the coach who was around his players, they end up drawing Notre Dame.
Let's preface this. St. Lawrence is one of three teams left.
Yeah.
They go on a miracle run in the conference tournament.
Miracle run is beating one team.
they beat a very bad Colgate team, and then they beat Quinnipiac. And so then they got to go to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 20 years. And then, and then less than 24 hours later, they have to shut down their season because their coach tests positive. Not one of the players, the coach.
What if it's like a false positive that's like revealed in a day or
less than 24 hours after the happiest moment of their collegiate?
Which is so weird because you would think he would have gotten tested before the game.
Like, where was he going after the game?
But is it even an actual positive or was it a false positive? I mean,
did he go to a strip club?
Before the game?
No, after the
game. During the game?
He could have tested positive the next day.
I suppose.
Anyway, I likened it to winning the lottery, and then you show up to win the lottery and collect your winnings, and it's actually the scene in Goodfellas where they, you know, whack Joe Pesci's character like that, right?
Okay.
You think it's the happiest moment of your life, and then you show up, and it's actually a hit on you, and you get killed.
That sounds sad.
Yeah, very sad. Our hearts go out to the St. Lawrence players.
BC thinks they're getting St. Lawrence. They're not. Surprise, they're getting Notre Dame. This isn't traditional Notre Dame.
Also a saintly school.
Okay, but they're still Notre Dame, and they're a good team. I mean, we've seen them. They've beat Minnesota twice. They beat Michigan twice. They're not a bad team by any means. There was talk of them maybe being on the bubble if, you know, this or that goes their way. Well, here you go. But that's kind of a jump, right, from getting, you know, an ECAC wunderkind.
Yeah.
A wunderkind probably isn't right. What am I looking for? An ECAC Cinderella.
Sure.
And then
that
getting,
just wasn't very good.
Then getting, well, Ugly Rella.
Yeah.
And then getting Notre Dame. And, I mean, and then if you win, you either get St. Cloud State, who's been the best team no one's ever heard of over the last decade, or BU, who has more NHL players than the Sabres.
Not great.
So that'll be a region worth watching.
It's a region that Notre Dame could very easily come out of. Wouldn't shock me.
No. I mean, I think the money here is on Boston College, though, right? I mean, we went down their line of draft picks, and, I mean, they have, a generational goalie. They have multiple players, Boldy and Newhook.
Yeah, that's frightening.
They have Hellison and someone else on the back end.
Yeah.
I mean, they're North Dakota, essentially, right? But out east?
Yeah, that's not fun. And BU, as we mentioned, is the wild card team that's also got a ton of players, whether it's Jay O'Brien, Robert Master Simone, Luke Tuck. I mean, they have tons of talent as well. So you got two hyper-talented teams in here. You have St. Cloud, who is probably the second best NCHC team tucked in. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this Notre Dame team who, you know, can be a giant killer on the right day. So this is a region that I think they should have switched things around. I would have put, I don't know, BU in the place of QPAC in the Minnesota region or something
like that.
So they
didn't stack this one and like
this one just feels very stacked.
Yeah. We talk about Boston College probably is the best team, but they have to win one game against one team and one game against another team and to get out of it, and that seems like really not a great scenario for them. I mean, it's not that they can't do it, and probably their odds for them are higher than anyone else, but man, like that's a tough turnaround to go through all those teams. I mean, it's good for us because we can watch it and we don't get that, but yikes, that's a region.
Yeah, these are some interesting regions, I'll say that.
Do you have a Final Four thought?
I thought we were putting our predictions in the article.
Well, I mean, we kind of are, but like we can also, you can change them.
Let's go.
I mean, do you see anything? Is there any reason
It's not even worth filling out a bracket this because it's just so random. Right?
I agree. I just was looking at this and I was thinking, I can't. It doesn't. Like, we talked about all year. There's like, we feel like there's five elite teams. And picking against any of them seems. It's very, very hard to do. I mean, when I did mine, I think I had 3-1 seeds. And the only reason I didn't have Wisconsin is because I didn't want to have all 4-1 seeds. Not because I didn't think they were. Not because I didn't think that they were good or that they would make it, but like you can't do that. But
we
you
think
look
there's
at this,
five elite teams, but then only one of them could make the Frozen Four because why not? You know, I mean, it's just so random.
Blinko?
You could say that. Well, next week we'll either get a Frozen Four episode where we'll be very happy and drinking champagne or something like that.
Champagne.
Or we will be talking about the rubble of the season. And
rubble.
What players will be coming back and final grades and all that. So two very different moods depending on what happens on Friday and Saturday.
No, I don't think we'll do the season wrap up next week.
What are we going to do
we'll
next
kick
week?
It out. Well, we'll discuss what happened in the tournament and we can run that down and other stuff. And then we'll actually take a full episode and run through sort of a season recap because I think there's a lot to digest here and there's a lot to project for next year as well.
Sure. Listening to Michigan HockeyCast 3.18. For Alex Tran, David Nasternak, come back in next week's episode where we'll be talking about either of the two things we just said we will be talking about.